going on? This is Joakim Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. A little bit more somber, I would say, edition, as the Bulls have lost three in a row. Maybe that's a reason for celebration for some. I think I have one of those on the line. A man who's been a longtime proponent of the tank, the great Keith Rontz from At Bull Scripted. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Fred?
I've been better, man. I've had a lot going on this week, and unfortunately, I haven't caught up on everything. I did get a chance to watch the 76ers game. I watched a little bit of the Pelicans game. Last night's game I have not had a chance to review yet. So I'd love to get your take on all three. And especially, let's start out with last night's Lakers game, which based on, I have read all the recaps, the bench performed well again, but the starters didn't bring it. Is that a pretty good synopsis?
That's a pretty good synopsis. LaVine had another rough shooting night, and Jerry and Grant dribbled the air out of the ball all game, which is kind of the problem we've run into the last three games, or at least the last two games and the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter of the Pelicans game into the double overtime. The Bulls are definitely missing Dunn at this point. You know, he just, you know, we call it the Dunn effect. Just his presence, the way that he plays the game on both ends of the floor is just completely different than Jerry and Grant. He just dribbles the air out of the ball constantly. As we're done, you know, is a great facilitator. He passes the ball to the spot, not the player. He gets them to where they're supposed to be. And Jerry and Grant is just scared. I don't know if he doesn't trust himself or he doesn't trust his teammates or if it's both or if he's just not a point guard. Could be a combination of all those things. But Grant, we definitely need to find a long-term solution for a backup point guard here.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Let's look for a second to follow up on this point, the Sixers game, which I did watch on the plane, especially the first half, and I was just furious with his performance, Grant specifically. The game was 35-31. One quick comment, Portis played fantastic in that game, as he has for basically the last 10 games. And he gets pulled. And I don't understand that with Fred. He's got this irritating habit of pulling guys with the hot hand. That said, he pulls him in the second quarter, 35-31. And I swear, it was 35-31, it seemed like, for about an hour. And the Bulls were still in that game despite shooting extremely poorly to start that game, playing terrible up to that point. And Grant, two straight possessions. The first one, he dribbles into a double team right past half court into the corner. And it's like something that is so basic that I would pull my 7th or 8th grade girl that I coach. If one of my girls did that, I would pull him. It was such a horrible, stupid play for an NBA player to literally dribble right past half court into the corner and allow for a double team that led to a turnover basket. Next play down, he does his patented, you know, dribbles it down to 13 or 14 seconds on the shot clock, shoots a contested brick 13-footer that's missed. And I'm like, this guy sucks. Of course, they bring it back down. And like two possessions, it goes from a game to the Bulls are down like 43-31 or 43-33. That guy sucks. And I've said it, and he's kind of been able to hide a little bit with Dunn's emergence, you know, coming off the bench, seeing some nice, you know, a couple nice matchups because the league isn't that deep. And, you know, he'll play against a couple second stringers. But when you need this guy to step up, he proved it in the playoffs last year, and he's proving it right now. He sucks. He's 25 years old, and and you can't be making those mistakes at 25. If he's 22, I'd understand it. Get him off this team. He's number one on my list of guys to jettison immediately after the season.
No, and it is very disappointing because, like you said, he has shown decent flashes is the ability to be a backup point guard this year. You know, we've kind of gone back and forth throughout the year. Preseason, he looked really good. And then obviously when he was starting, I kind of had a vendetta against him because I wanted Dunn to start, but he wasn't doing well. So it wasn't really my biased opinion pushing an agenda there. But like you said, the playoffs, Grant just cannot handle pressure of any kind. Some players, you know, thrive in the moment. Grant crumbles. He just falls completely apart and throws the game away. And it's sad.
Great call. I mean, that's the best way of putting it. He can't handle pressure. I think that's the best way of putting it. Holiday all of a sudden has taken just an abhorrent turn. His shooting numbers recently, I mean, it makes me nauseous. They've just been horrible. Another horrible game last night, 2-8 from the field. What the heck has happened to this kid? He was so good, and he was on such a nice run, and some of his games this week have just been, it's jaw-dropping how bad he's played.
Well, I think a lot of it kind of comes down to Grant. Stacey King kind of pointed out during the broadcast that it seems that anytime a play is called and it's broken, Grant doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to react to the situation and, you know, improvise. If the play doesn't go exactly as planned, Grant pulls the ball back out and dribbles for another 10 seconds and then walks himself into an ugly contested jump shot. I really don't know why Fred hasn't gone with Nwaba, Levine, Holiday, Markkanen, Rolo to start the game. He's been putting the ball in Zach's hands quite a bit, and I would like to see Zach kind of get a little more into the flow of the offense. But at the end of the day, having Nwaba out there to start the game, one, gives you the energy, so we're not getting down 15, 20 points out the gate. The ball's in Zach's hands anyway, so you have a good defensive lineup out there. That's the way I'd be starting the game. I think Nwaba's earned it. I think with Dunn down, you have to reward Nwaba, and Grant just isn't getting it done. So something has to be done, at least to start the game.
I think it's a great call. Again, Holiday against the Sixers had 5 points in 25 minutes, and he just horrific shooting. Horrific shooting. And, yeah, I'm really maybe so you're saying insert Nwaba ahead of Holiday?
Ahead of Grant. Put Nwaba at the point. Have Levine be, you know, the on-ball two guard. Keep Holiday at the three just for the defense. At the end of the day, he can still shoot. I believe the graphic that they showed last night, he's shooting under 30% in the last few games. So that is horrible. But Holiday has been streaky like this all year. He's similar to Grant in the way where, you know, one out of every five, one out of every 10 games, he'll give you something miraculous. But since he had his career three-point night, I think that was 2 weeks ago, he has looked horrible.
Yeah, but you bring up a good point. It's probably due to the departure of Dunn, who was doing a great job setting up the offense. He was a legit threat at driving and attacking the basket, which causes the defense to, you know, at least have that consideration. We got to watch out for this guy. And Grant doesn't put any pressure on the defense. I mean, nobody's worried about that guy.
Grant puts the pressure on the offense because he takes the clock down all the way to 10 seconds, and then it's rush mode. So, you know, half the shots that guys are putting up are heavily contested, bad looks, just because there's no time left on the shot clock because Grant's taking it all away, practicing his dribbles.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. He's a guy that we got to figure out what to do. That position needs to be shored up next year, no doubt, either through the draft or through, you know, just getting a capable vet in there. And there's enough of them in the league that we need to upgrade at that position. Backup point guard. A little bit about Zach. What's your take on him? I mean, I've been a little bit confused is probably the right word here. I mean, he looks so good physically, which is obviously the most important thing, right? He looks like he still has the athleticism, the speed, the quickness, but he has just had some horrible games shooting wise. And I mean, am I getting a little bit too concerned here, or is it, you thinking a big picture here, we're going to be fine?
Big picture here, we're going to be fine. I don't think you're overreacting. I think it is slightly concerning. The guy hasn't played for almost a full year. He's coming in with all these expectations of being the number one guy, being the closer. He's only played in the fourth, I think, maybe four times now. I think he's only finished the fourth twice, one of which was the Pelicans game that he didn't even technically finish because it went into double overtime. So I think he's got a lot of pressure on himself, and he just has to get that mindset out of there and just go out there and play and make the right basketball plays. Right now, I think he's just too much in his own head, and that's kind of combating with you know, the whole reintegrating into a live basketball setting. So I don't think we have anything to worry about long term. Ideally, if he struggles the rest of the year, we might actually be able to get a better deal for him in the offseason. So it wouldn't be the worst thing. I don't think Zach's going to be broken forever. I'm sure by, you know, the end of the year or even Sunday against Milwaukee, we could see, you know, the Zach that we saw the first two games. But with rotation players like Dunn missing, make the offense easier. And when Zach has the ball in his hands, he does seem to want to shoot. I would like to see him pass more and kind of get into the flow of the offense that was working before he returned. Because last night, the last 3 minutes of the game, Zach was in for it and we did not score.
Yeah, and let me go out and say this. I'm going to step out and say it, and I know most of the Bulls universe is probably going to disagree with me here. Markkanen should be the number one choice going forward. He's the guy I want to have the ball. I want the Bulls to build around him. He's our alpha, and everyone else should take their spots after him. I think there's a little bit of debate here. Hey, is LaVine going to be our 1A and you know, Markkanen be 1B and maybe Dunn 1C? I think the Bulls need to put a stop to that immediately. To me, Markkanen has the highest ceiling. I've said it from day one, and I want him to be the number one choice going forward and him to be the focus of the offense and everyone else to take their spot around him. It rarely ever works wherever, whatever team it is in the NBA, that there's two alphas who are competing down the road. It hurt us in 2015 with Rose and Butler, and it's hurt other teams. I think everybody needs to understand that in Houston, it's Harden, and everybody else takes, you know, takes their roles after that. In Cleveland, it was LeBron, and Irving was 1B when they were, you know, really challenging for titles and winning titles or winning a title. And
yeah,
I think,
Kyrie was 1B when LeBron didn't want to take the shot. Then he was 1A.
Yeah, maybe. Even so. No, it was LeBron's team. And Miami had this problem when they had the great three. I thought the first year when they lost to Dallas, it was like, well, whose team is it? Is it? Until Wade turned it over to LeBron, things didn't really get sorted out. I had a vibe. I just get the vibe that this is going to be a continuing issue or potentially an issue for the next 3 years. Who's the guy who's going to take the shots down the line? Whose team is it? Let's just cut the crap. I mean, it's going to be Markkanen's team. Do you disagree with this assertion, or how do you feel about that statement?
I can definitely see where you're going, and I think it's a good problem to have. You got to realize Zach isn't who he's going to be next year. So kind of leaving it open, I'd say right now, yes. With Zach struggling currently and still returning, I'd feed the rookie. Because there is the possibility that Lowry does have the highest ceiling out of them. He's 20 years old, and, you know, he's already showing stuff that is just unbelievable for his age, size. The kid continues to amaze even when his shot's off. You know, he still finds a way to get things done all over. I think he had 3 or 4 blocks last night.
Yeah. He's incredible. He really is. There's not a game that goes by where I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, how did the entire league miss on this? You redraft that draft this summer. Is there any doubt he's top three? I mean, it's him, Mitchell, and Tatum, right?
I'd say there's no doubt that he's top five. Obviously, you know, kind of fit-wise, somebody still might have taken Lonzo. Somebody might still have taken Fultz. Somebody might have taken, you know, Dennis Smith Jr., depending on the fit that they needed for their team.
Well, but
definitely top five.
Who's taken Fultz now ahead of him, though? You know what I mean? Like,
oh, no, nobody.
Redrafted today. Let's just throw all those guys in the thing. Let's have a redraft. Who is taking, I mean, even Lonzo. I don't take Lonzo ahead of Markkanen. There's no way. Donovan Mitchell is the only guy you can make an argument, and I think Donovan's going to struggle. He's a little bit undersized in the long run. If he, God forbid, gets an injury and he loses that athleticism that really kind of separates him, I mean, the thing about Markkanen is I think he could, again, God forbid, suffer an injury and still have incredible value for a team just with the shooting ability. Tatum's been
great. look at Dirk at 40. He can barely walk in the first step until he gets going, but he can still drain a shot from anywhere.
Exactly.
On the floor.
Anywhere he wants to be, exactly. So I think anyone who doesn't redraft it, like if we redraft that rookie class and he's not top three, you know, that person should be fired. There's no doubt about it. That guy's a moron because Fultz is a complete disaster right now. And I don't see that getting better. I don't know how it gets better. I think this is a bizarre situation that I just can't imagine ever, like, I've never seen anything like it.
I think they really messed the kid up. They drafted another point guard when they had a point forward, tried to turn him into a spot-up shooter. Sounds like he shot his shoulder out, and now in recovery, he doesn't know who he is, he doesn't know what they want him to be, and he's completely lost himself. It's sad. But I really feel that's what happened is, you know, they tried to turn him into something that he wasn't. In the process, he overworked himself, hurt himself, and now he's just lost.
Hmm. I wanted to talk a little bit about the top four. You know, everyone seems to think this upcoming draft that we're tanking so hard for to get in that top four. And I've done some extensive study of all these top four, these can't-miss guys, these top five in general. And I have major, major questions about a few of them. I'd like to get into this now. So my bigger point is everyone who's losing sleep over the Bulls, you know, winning a few more games, I agree, right? Ideally, you'd like to have the number one pick. That you have less margin for error there. You have every option open to you as opposed to picking 7, 8, or 9. But let me just say, some of these guys that are labeled can't misses, Mo Bamba, Trae Young. Let's start out with Bamba. Bamba can't hit a shot outside of 7 feet. This guy's offense is so limited. How exactly is that going to translate into an NBA where big guys are expected to do so much on the perimeter? And I don't care how good he is defensively. He's excellent defensively, no doubt there. How's this guy like a sure thing in the NBA? Like, how is this an absolute, you're going to say he deserves to be drafted ahead of Miles or Mikal Bridges?
I would not say that he is a sure thing. He does have, you know, the kind of frame that looks like it may never fill out. That's probably just, you know, the build that he's going to be. He may get stronger, but he's never going to be the thick lumber tree down low. But he does take more three-point attempts than Ayton. He's only shooting at, I believe, 25 or 30%. But he has been making a concerted effort to show that he can do it, and he's improving on it. So I do like Bamba. I mean, I kind of think about a Rudy Gobert with a corner three in the long run. That is appealing to me. His wingspan is ridiculous. When you have Lowry, you know, you already got somebody stretching the floor. If he could even just get the corners down like Taj has figured out in Minnesota, you know, that's all you really need. So I kind of compare him to like Gobert with the potential of getting a jump shot. It is a slow jumper, but it's not the ugliest thing in the world. So is he ever going to be a knockdown three-point shooter? Probably not. Can he get to the point where you at least got to, you know, drag your ass out of the paint and step out to close out on him? Yeah, I do think that is a possibility, and his defensive end, his rebounding, his defensive awareness, his offensive awareness around the rim is all very good, but I definitely have concerns like you with Bamba. He's a very intriguing prospect, but I wouldn't necessarily say can't miss.
Yeah. Look, I think it's entirely possible that Miles Bridges or Mikal Bridges are both going to be better, and they're clearly right now trending towards falling, you know, being drafted after the great Bamba. Trae Young, hey, I love his skill set. There's no doubt he's incredibly skilled. But a player like him, you know, everybody compares him to being next Curry. Curry's a legit 6'3". You know, Van Gundy, I heard made this point on Waddle and Sylvie this last week, and I've been saying the same thing. I agree with them. Whatever you think about Steph Curry, he's a legit 6'3", and he's not a bad athlete. You know, he's quick. He's got some athletic ability. Extremely skilled player. He's not going to wow you with a dunk, but he's quick, and he's got other assets there. Trae Young, I when I watch him on the TV, I have more closer to 5'11", 6 foot, and that makes all the difference in the world. And I don't see him. There's a big wide spectrum on one end of Curry, and on the other end, Jimmer Fredette. Where does Trae Young fall in that spectrum of guys that have just scored lights out in college, who have been just complete busts or great in the NBA? And I think it's, you know, I don't feel is nearly as strong as some people do about how his skill set's going to translate to the NBA. What say you about Trae Young?
I think pretty much like you just pointed out, he has kind of the biggest gap between being successful and being a bust. It's going to be one or the other. There's probably not going to be anywhere in between. He's going to have to be stellar in the NBA to stick around, or he's going to end up, you know, doing 3-point competitions like Jimmer Fredette over in China. But I'm hoping teams fall in love with the Steph Curry comparison. I hope some team takes Trae Young in the top three and pushes another prospect further back, closer to our reach. He's amazing to watch. He's, you know, can't miss television for college basketball, but his size, his skill set, I just think that completely changes when you get to the NBA and you got 6'4 guards with a 6'10 wingspan like Chris Dunn guarding you. How are you going to get that shot off? Yes. Unless you're shooting it from half court, which he's proven he can do, but that's not something an NBA coach is going to want you to do, especially as a rookie. You know, Curry kind of changed the game, earned his right to do whatever he wants. I don't think a rookie is going to have that kind of reins. Maybe on a team like the Magic he would, or Atlanta or something like that. But I don't think he's going to be a successful NBA player. I'd gladly be proven wrong, but he's not somebody that I've had on the list for the Bulls. He's kind of somebody that's on the list that I'm like, all right, hopefully some people overvalue him and they leave so-and-so on the board.
Yeah, so right now the latest mock drafts I've seen have Ayton, Doncic, Ayton I love, right? He's got everything you'd want just by watching him, with the exception of I still question whether this guy has the motor to be the man in the NBA. I don't like his defense. I think he should be blocking more shots. I think he should be a more dominant force than he is. And when you see that, I get a little concerned. If you're not dominating in college, you sure as heck aren't going to dominate in the pros. Are my concerns valid?
That's not always the case. You got to look at Joel Embiid. He had similar concerns with his defensive end in college. For instance, Lauri Markkanen, our own draft pick from Eaton's college, had major concerns about his rebounding and his defense. So it could very well be a scheme thing from Arizona. It could be instruction. In college, you're only allowed 5 fouls before you foul out. Having Ayton on the bench isn't as valuable as having him on the floor. So if, you know, it could be simply direction from the coach, you know, stay home. Don't be over aggressive. We don't need you fouling out. We need you on the floor. Also, the competition factor comes in. When you're a grown man and you're pretty much playing with a whole bunch of little boys, probably lose your interest. I think if he's got somebody like Embiid in his face, trash talking, and from what I've gathered, Ayton has a very similar personality to Embiid. Very joking, very easygoing, fun guy to be around. I think those kind of things he would definitely step up for. And like you said, he is a very backwards prospect. The offensive end is remarkable. His jump shot is beautiful. The motor is concerning, but I think there's more underlying factors there that I don't think will be a problem in the NBA.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I don't know if the Bulls are going to have, I mean, obviously we'll have a shot at getting the number one overall pick. If the draft was held today, he'd be my number one overall pick. I don't see that changing. You just don't see a player with that kind of physical skills at this age. And you know, you don't pass on that, right? But you know, those concerns we already outlined. Again, I don't see, like, this draft is like, oh my gosh, these guys are all sure things. Doncic, I love what I've seen offensively, no doubt about it. Who's this guy going to guard in the NBA? Isn't that a legit concern? And he's going to be not just average, but bad as a defender.
No, yeah, I kind of look at Doncic as a James Harden prototype. not the fastest, not the most athletic, but on the offensive end with hesitations and, you know, dribbles that he can create for himself. But I do not see him being able to guard any small forwards in the NBA. I think he's going to have to be hidden kind of in the two spot with a good defensive point guard and a good defensive wing next to him. So I have those concerns as well, and that's kind of my thing when I get in between, picking between Doncic and Ayton is, okay, one guy's 7'1", has a 44-inch vertical, 250 pounds. He could rebound more. He could be a little more aggressive on the defensive. I think that can be done. That's not out of the picture. Now you got a 6'6", 6'7", not so athletic player coming over from the EuroLeague to play in the NBA. I don't know if it's going to go so well for him. You know, a lot of Euro bigs have had success because they can step out. They have the range. But then you see guards like Fournier and what's the other guy in the Magic? Hezonja. Mm-hmm. You know, they struggle, and if they're not hitting their shot, they become a liability that's hurting you more than it's helping you. So on an off night, they can become irrelevant. So I definitely see the concerns there. And like I said, that's where when I get into the Ayton and the Doncic comparisons, I think Ayton can improve on the things that he has because he has all the tools in order to do so. You can't really fix Doncic's defensive ability, I don't feel.
No doubt. So, most Ayton, Doncic 2 on most drafts I've seen, mock drafts, Bagley 3. But Bagley can't hit a three-pointer. Like, again, he's a guy who I like a lot of his game inside the three-point line, but the NBA is not trending towards that. If this was 1988, I'd totally be on board for Bagley. I am concerned he's a more athletic, you know, who's a good comparison? Like, I see Bosch in his game, kind of, but he's got to get better at hitting the three in college. He's shooting 31.6% from three in college. How's that going to work in the pro game? You know, like...
And the shot's farther, too, so...
Yes.
You got to kind of incorporate that. My other thing to that would be, I don't believe Anthony Davis was the best three-point shooter initially, either, and that's kind of the mold I see Bagley falling into. Probably will never reach Anthony Davis heights, but kind of that kind of player. I do think he could improve from three, but his free throws were a major concern early. I'm not sure what his percentage is at currently. I know it went up a little bit, but that was the early deciding factor that pushed him from
one 62%
further down.
He's 62%. Is it exactly another similarity to another Duke bust, Jahmyl Okafor? He's definitely more athletic than Okafor, which I think is why he'll do better. But 62% at the free throw, I mean, just again, something that's a bad sign. And again, it's not a slam dunk to me. Michael Porter Jr., Trae Young's moved up to four. Porter Jr.'s at five. Like, if the Bulls end up with Porter Jr., that's something I'd be worth, you know, a test you were taking, because most people had him the number one overall or in that discussion. And if you can get him at five or six, Jaren Jackson now has moved up. He's in six on most mock drafts. Now, he's the guy I've been
impressed with. What's your take on him? Do you think he could play a small forward in the NBA?
I don't see.
Do you think he would have to be a power forward center combo?
I think he'd have to be a power forward center combo. I do like his game, though. He's really impressed me lately. I've watched a lot of Michigan State lately, and he's developing much quicker and much better, and he's a better athlete than I originally thought he was in the first couple games. I watched the Duke game when they played earlier this year. He's really, really excited me. But again, the problem is I think his best position is Markkanen's position. So it's not a great fit for us, but I do like him. What's your take on him?
I do like his athleticism. I've been trying to gauge whether or not I think he can be a small forward.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And I kind of, no, and I lean the same way you do, which is why I'm kind of staying away. With Portis still here at least next year on a rookie deal and hopefully coming back on a team-friendly deal long-term, I don't see the need to logjam that position more. Miles Bridges has been growing on me a lot, mm-hmm. a lot. same with Knox. And Knox is a little further back in the projections, and obviously he's a little more of a project, but I feel he may have more upside. But when you watch Miles Bridges play, the energy he plays with, his athleticism on both ends of the floor is just, it's fun to watch.
I agree 100%. I agree. So, you know, all these guys, don't get me wrong, all these guys I mentioned, if the Bulls end up with any one of them, I think that's a good thing, right? Obviously. I've out of all the guys we've talked about, Trae Young gives me the most concerns. That said, I even think the Bulls could be a good fit for Trae Young since all you have Dunn who can just handle the harder defensive backcourt position. You know, Bamba is the next pick. The next one's Colin Sexton, believe it or not, who's moved up from Alabama. A point guard, extremely exciting. I even think the Bulls could take a point here just because I love Dunn's versatility defensively, and I think Dunn is versatile enough that he could play shooting guard enough. And, you know, Colin Sexton, as the season's gone on, have you changed your opinion of him? I mean, he is a force of nature at the point guard position.
Oh, coming into the year, I kind of compared Duval to like a Rose prospect and Sexton to like a Westbrook prospect, because he just plays with that grit and that edge, and he's not the kind of guy that you want to get going, because once he feels it, it's lights out, it's game over. And I'm sure come draft night, everybody will be talking about them playing 3-on-5 the rest of the game and actually outscoring the other team, which is miraculous. And Sexton is a very intriguing player, but there's a couple point guards that'll be late firsts that I'm hoping here in the next 12 days we get some good news that we have an extra first round pick for this year, and then we could start talking about that kind of stuff, because there is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from Kentucky. He's a 6'6 point guard. And then you got Trayvon Duval at Duke. And then you have Jalen Brunson from Villanova. That are all going to be picks that are like 15 and back. That could definitely be looked into with an extra first to, you know, bring in as a replacement for Grant. Although I'd still like to bring in a veteran point guard as well.
Yep. No, I agree there. To me right now, my initial analysis of this draft is, you know, it's still early, right? There's still a guy that can, I'm sure, come out of the woodwork, but it's 10 players deep. It's Ayton, Doncic, Bagley, Young, Porter Jr., Jackson, Jaren Jackson from Michigan State, Bamba, Sexton, and the two Bridges. That's 10 guys. You end up with any of those 10, the Bulls are going to be significantly better. And that's the 10 I want. I'm not sold on Wendell Carter at Duke. Knox, I'm still, like, iffy on. I got to watch him more, you know. But I feel like if we can get in the top 10, we're going to be fine. So that's just my initial analysis. I think most people have this, like, delineation between the top three and then there's, like, a massive drop-off or four, you know, maybe. And I don't see that as much. I think it's a lot more even, just because of the question marks with Bagley and Doncic, than I think most would say.
No, I mean, I think the playing field is a little more even than people make it out to be. I do think there is a drop-off around that level, but I also agree in the sense that it's going to be kind of hard to go wrong in the top 10. I think if we're picking from, you know, 6 to 10, that the Bulls front office will definitely have their work cut out for them, and it'll be a lot harder decision than if we had a top five and, you know, it was a little more clear cut and we had more options. But picking 6 to 10, 6 to 14 is going to be interesting because there is a lot of very intriguing prospects that could help this team. I'm really hoping if we can't get Ayton that we go with a 3-and-D player, like one of the Bridges or Knox. I think that's a position that we definitely need.
No doubt.
Greatly, especially with Levine's deficiencies on defense, although he has shown little flashes of, you know, all right, maybe down the road, this is something that we won't be so concerned about.
Yeah. Amen, brother. Amen. Keith, it's always great to have you on. Great, great content this week. Looking forward to the week ahead. I mean, it seems like the Bulls have definitely, since the Dunn injury, have taken a turn for the worse, despite the solid effort against the Pelicans, which was a disaster down the stretch. Really quick, as an aside, I did go in to look at the numbers for while we were talking for Holiday, and he's had a 1 of 8 from three, a 1 of 7 from three in the last three games. It's just his 3-point shooting has just fallen off of, you know, a cliff, and you're probably right. It has a lot to do with Grant. But anyhow, any predictions on the week to come? Let's see who we got on the schedule here. We got, obviously, tomorrow. Who do we got tomorrow?
Sunday. Milwaukee.
Milwaukee is in, obviously, a state of flux, but they also have one of the best players in the NBA. And in the week ahead, who else do we got?
Portland is the last game of this month. We got Milwaukee, Portland. And then I believe either the 1st or 2nd of February we would play the Kings. So Kings should definitely be a game that we win. I think the other two are kind of 50-50, like you said. Mm-hmm. The Bucks are kind of in a state of flux with an interim coach. I know Giannis went off the other night, so he's clearly not too bothered by the situation. He's still going out and doing his thing. But we have beaten the Bucks both times previously this year, so... whether that's Fred has a great game plan for him, or, you know, our team just gets up for him because they trolled us with their whole little mascot thing, putting Benny the Bull as our top player on their schedule layout. I'm sure the Bulls took that personally, and that's actually, even being on Team Tank after that whole scenario, one of the teams that I put on my, all right, I'd like to win these games list.
Sounds good, my man. Hey, Keith, always great to talk to you. Have a fantastic week. Go Bulls. All the best to you and your family, brother.
Yep, you as well, boss.
Talk Have to you next one, week. Keith. Bye-bye. All right, hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye with basketball historian. The great Tim Gallagher is online. Tim, how you doing, brother?
Hi, Fred. I'm doing well. We're a little past the midseason point, and All-Star selections and All-Star break coming up here in the not-too-distant future, so lots to talk about.
Absolutely. Let's start out with the big news in the NBA right now about the injury to Boogie Cousins. I know you probably felt the same way about Cousins. I'm not a huge fan. I know he's, you know, got probably top-5 talent, extremely talented player, but you do hate to see this happen to anyone, especially in the situation that he's in going into his unrestricted free agency at the end of the year. What a blow to the kid, and you know, I'd just like to get your opinion. What do you think is going to happen next in the future for DeMarcus Cousins?
Well, and I've been pretty clear on past podcasts, really over the last few years we've been talking, that I'm not a fan of his, just in terms of his negative energy and just being a big baby on the court. I've never said there's not incredible talent there for someone of any size, much less a player of his size, but I also kind of feel like the karma catches up to you, right? Just the negative energy that he's played with over the years, and attitude toward opponents and officials, and just kind of disrespecting the game, I would say. Mm-hmm. Despite all his talent, I've never been a fan of him. I wouldn't touch him, even obviously before this injury, just because of all the baggage that comes with him. I've always been a little bit surprised by how enamored so many knowledgeable reporters and people involved in the game seem to be with him. I've never bought into it. Obviously, the Pelicans were starting to click. He and Anthony Davis, I think things were aligned about as well as they could be in terms of a low-key coach like Alvin Gentry playing with a couple of former Kentucky players, most notably Anthony Davis, but Darius Miller's there, Rondo's there. So I think surrounding him with that kind of situation, you know, if he couldn't succeed in that, I'm not sure when and how he would. Certainly wouldn't wish this kind of injury or any injury on any player, regardless if I'm a fan of theirs or not. But it obviously is a severe blow to the Pelicans and for him. The timing really couldn't be worse in terms of having the rug kind of pulled out from under him with probably the best stretch of his career for all those reasons I mentioned, the All-Star game coming up, and obviously what's at stake for him financially in terms of a contract timing. So Really disappointing. And we've talked over the years on some podcasts just about the rash of injuries and what's gone on with a lot of players in the league. It seems unprecedented with the injuries. You know, we can touch a little bit on Kawhi Leonard and his absence basically from the Spurs almost all season. And is it too much repetition, too many AAU games when these guys are coming up? I don't know what the exact reasoning is, but it seems to be a trend that just isn't slowing down. What's your take on all of it?
Yeah, there are no doubt all these injuries, and you know, I think that's all the more reason why teams need to understand the importance of rest and the science behind it, and not overplaying your players. I think New Orleans was guilty of that. I thought too many of their guys had too many big minutes. Houston's guilty, and so, of course, is Tom and the Timberwolves. It's just also the odds. I mean, the best way not to be injured is to be sitting on the bench. And that game, it's not a fair criticism, right, to label. I mean, it was a two-point game, a victory over the Rockets, so completely understand why you'd have him out there. But over the course of a season, the wear and tear on a player who's playing excessive minutes isn't good, you know, and it does increase the likelihood that you're going to be injured. I don't know. I'd have to look up to see where Cousins was ranked minutes-wise, but Davis is way up there, and I think it's just ridiculous. Overall, with Cousins, I think this is just going to really severely hurt whatever market he had. I think a lot of teams would have been hesitant, even without the injury, to sign him to a max deal for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And I think this injury is going to – I think there might be a team out there that will give him a 2-year, maybe, even a 3 possibly, at top-end money. But no one's going to stretch him out 4 or 5 years. I mean, maybe New Orleans, I guess, if it's potentially possible. But they were kind of an interesting team to me. You know, I do feel like they might have been a scary first, you know, team to play in the division, in the playoffs in the first round. You know, let's say if it was the Timberwolves at 3 and New Orleans was at, you know, right at 6 there, you know, how would that finished up? I think it would have been an interesting series, especially I think Davis is playing great this year. What say you?
Right, I agree. I've always been a Jrue Holiday fan as well, and it's taken a little while to get the rhythm and get everybody healthy, although obviously that's changed now with the Cousins injury, but like I mentioned, I think things had kind of aligned for them in terms of success. In an odd way, this injury may work out for the Pelicans, where they may be the leader in keeping Cousins because maybe just out of a mix of loyalty, the Kentucky connection with Anthony Davis, the proof that they had played well together. So it may work out to have New Orleans keep him or retain him, re-sign him, just based on these unfortunate circumstances. I know that's certainly not the way they would have mapped it out, but it may work to their advantage to keep him.
Do you foresee him staying in New Orleans, or do you see him ending up next year with another team?
Well, for those reasons I just mentioned, I sense that maybe New Orleans is the heavy leader of keeping him, right? They're going to be involved with his surgery, with his rehab. He'll, you know, when he's able to get around, you know, the season I think will still be finishing up. They're going to certainly be in contention for one of the spots for a lower seed in the playoffs. I think obviously they're going to slip with his injury, and I think, you know, the Clippers and the Jazz could be making a little bit of a move in the West. Although I went back and looked at my playoff predictions, and really the only teams that are not in the top 8 that I had predicted that would be in there were the Clippers, and I didn't have the Pelicans there, so it kind of flip-flopped, and that may change now based on this injury. But overall, the teams in the 8 slots right now are about what I expected.
Yeah.
Or Minnesota. I did not have Minnesota there either. I had Memphis as I think one of the lower seeds as well. And obviously with Conley being out, firing Tisdale, that situation's imploded, and they're certainly not going to get there.
So the Cavs have fallen to 28-19, just a slew of atrocious losses on the recent in the last few weeks. They're only a game and a half against the Heat of all teams, who are 27-21. Is this the end of it, or is this just another one of those roadblocks we often see right before the All-Star break, and they usually round, you know, kind of round into form? I don't know about you, but I feel they've slipped so far defensively that I don't think this ship is rightable. And it's going to require a trade of significant proportions to kind of mix this up so they get back to the finals again.
Well, every year we seem to have this conversation that it looks like the Cavs are imploding, that they're not going to get it. The ship righted. There's a lot of dysfunction. Who's going to stay on the roster? Who's going to get traded? What assets do they have to even acquire somebody that could help them get over the hump? So we seem to have this same Groundhog Day discussion about this time of year. And I think I'm with you in that until LeBron gets unseated from the Eastern Conference Championship, I got to see it to believe it. It certainly seems like this is a new level of dysfunction and turmoil, but they've always seemed to right the ship. And I don't think that Toronto and the Celtics are so powerful and dominant that, you know, that Cleveland can't unseat them, even if they don't have the number one or number two seed in the playoffs. So I'll believe it when I see it. And it almost seems like, I don't think the Cavs are doing this intentionally, but it almost seems like it's a smokescreen to get other teams to maybe relax a little bit against them or lower their expectations of what might get accomplished. I mean, you still have LeBron and Kevin Love. Isaiah Thomas is back now and working his way back into playing shape. It's hard to bet against those guys, especially in the East.
Mm-hmm.
One little side point, I was able to attend the Celtics at Clippers game on Wednesday night and just watching Kyrie Irving play in person. And I saw him play in person before, even as a high school player. So I understand the level of talent and electricity that he brings to a game, but still puzzles me why the Cavs would trade him. I just don't understand. Even though Kyrie demanded it, he was still under contract. And how are you going to improve your team by not having him on the roster? I don't get it.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd like to get your opinion on how the Celtics look. They had a four-game losing streak going into that game, and they beat the Clippers to kind of end that losing streak. Give me your little 4-1-1 on them, watching them in person. What do you think of Tatum, who most people, most of the, you know, biased writers nationally would probably vote him as Rookie of the Year right now?
I loved him. Seeing him in person for the first time. Well, take that back. I did see him a little bit in the summer league in Las Vegas, just briefly. But again, that's a little tougher to project how good he is. Although he was very impressive in both Salt Lake and in Vegas in the summer league, but seeing him in a regular season NBA game, I had the fortunate luck of having great tickets. We were four rows behind the basket, right by the Celtics bench. So great viewing from a number of different perspectives. So love Tatum. I kind of compared him, I think, before on some of our discussions to Grant Hill, pre-injury Grant Hill.
Right.
And that's a pretty high mark. And just in terms of his versatility and skill set and demeanor on the court. So, and he actually had to carry a little bit heavier load the game I saw against the Clippers because Marcus Smart and Horford did not play. So it was really kind of Kyrie and Tatum that carried a little bit of the load, and they certainly did. You know, the Clippers have had some injuries as well. Gallinari's been hurt. That was DeAndre Jordan's first game back after being out for a while. So I really felt like even with the Celtics missing Horford and Smart, they were in command of the game and outmatched the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyrie's talent and what he brings to the table, even when he's not in the game, I'm watching his sideline demeanor and what kind of teammate he is, and just hard to top him. You know, it's kind of almost at the Steph level, or you know, certainly right there in terms of just all the positive things he brings. One player that impressed me quite a bit for Boston was Terry Rozier. just his energy and athleticism was really a difference maker in the game. It might not have shown up so much in the box score, but just one of those guys, and seeing him in person and seeing him up close, just the impact he had on the game with hustle plays and intensity was very impressive. He moved up a few notches in my book with seeing him play in that ball game as well.
Interesting. So overall, any other takeaways from that? I'm curious to get your opinion on Lou Williams, who I've watched a lot this year for the Clippers, who's been absolutely unbelievable and probably going to rob Nico or Portis of the Sixth Man of the Year award. Just incredible play from him. How did he look in person?
He got in the 20s. I don't remember the exact amount, but he's just a natural born scorer. He's not that big of a guy, but he just finds a way to score the ball and in a variety of ways. So he certainly helped keep the Clippers in the game. Blake Griffin had a mediocre game. No one else really played that well. I think I caught Teodosic on a bad night. I watched him play as a EuroLeague player on some games and really liked the way he passed the ball and his basketball IQ, but he did not have a good game. And I think Rozier and Kyrie and the people he was matched up against were just a little too much for him. So, but yeah, Lou Williams is amazing. I saw he had 40 last night, his fourth 40-point game, I believe, of the season. So he's something else. And, kind of in a Jamal Crawford kind of way. You know, he's not always been on great teams, but he can go off at any time, at any night. And obviously without him, I think the Clippers would be in a lot worse shape than 500 and, knocking on the door for a playoff berth in the West.
So the All-Star teams were named, All-Star starters for the team LeBron. The starters are Cousins, who's obviously going to need to be replaced now. DeMarcus Cousins at center, Anthony Davis at forward center, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James. And team Curry is Giannis, Curry, obviously, DeMar DeRozan, Joel Embiid, and James Harden. What did you think of the process this year and how it went down compared to past years? And are you a fan of this new system?
Well, I agree that it would have been more fun to watch a version of the draft, how they selected. There's certainly even with the people picking being dispersed, with the media being what it is now, there's a way that could have been presented, I think, to make it a little more interesting in the draft. And I thought the intent was to make it almost like, hey, we're at the playground and we're going to pick teams and, my guys against your guys. And I thought it fell short in what it could have been in terms of just how it was presented and promoted. And I think the All-Star game has gotten a little stale for me in terms of just the competitiveness of it. So I understand why they want to try to shake it up a little bit. It's more like a bad AAU game in terms of just running up and down, no defense, dunks. So I'd like to see the game be a little more competitive for my interests. Mm-hmm. So I get it that they wanted to shake things up and shift it a little bit. So I think they're on the right track with that. But how it was presented, I would have probably looked in on it or watched something after the fact, on YouTube or NBA TV or NBA.com or something of the draft process and how it was done. But I followed as close as anyone, and I didn't really follow exactly when it was going to be picked and how it was going to be picked and who was involved. So I would have liked to have seen it handled a little better. What was your thought on it?
Yeah, I agree. I thought they could have made it great, publicize it, have it on TV, have LeBron on one side announce his pick and, Steph on the other side announce it, go back and forth and kind of build some rivalry. It just the way it was all hidden, it just frustrated me. Just a blown opportunity. It could have been cool, but it is a pretty big departure from what it was. And I actually think it's going to be interesting. I'm going to enjoy watching it, and I'm glad they've kind of gone in this direction.
Right. Well, certainly on the West, it could have been basically the Warriors and one other guy.
I know.
So at least this mixes it up a little bit. And But in my vision of what I was hoping it would be almost like the NBA draft, where you've got the war room and maybe LeBron and Steph have kind of their, you know, some of their buddies or teammates or, you know, somebody on the staff kind of helping them, you know, okay, who's still available? Here's our draft board, you know, even if it's on a grease board or something. That would have been kind of cool to see. For some reason, I guess the NBA was worried about sensitivity and players having hurt feelings and things like that. So for me, who cares? Let's make it more interesting for the fans. These guys are all getting paid. They're all, you know, elite level players. And so tough break if someone is a little disappointed they didn't get picked where they wanted to. But I think that's part of the reason it would have been compelling.
Yeah, agreed. I'm looking forward to it, though. I love the All-Star game, NBA All-Star game. Even when people have been complaining about the lack of competition and lack of competitiveness over the last few years, I still enjoy watching it. Anytime you put those guys, talent level, of the best in the NBA, together on one court, it's always a good viewing for me. It's great to watch. I mean, there's always a play that makes you go, wow, you know?
Right. Well, that's what's so fascinating about watching a guy like Kyrie in person, and got there early enough to watch pregame warm-ups, and he came out by himself. He doesn't have quite the Steph level following for his warm-up routine or the things that Steph does, but still just the buzz in the arena when he came out just to do his pregame shots and stretching and jumping rope, and you know, he's like a rock star. And so to see a guy on the floor with a number of other very elite players, and you know, Blake Griffin, for example, and he's such a level above all of them, it's pretty fascinating to see. And one other quick point, I know we're not talking heavily on the Bulls, but just with Joakim Noah's latest incident and he and Hornacek not seeing eye to eye and, you know, taking a leave from the team, it's just, I still have to promote the Bulls front office being able to cut ties with Noah and Rose, you know, somewhat tactfully. And it's like selling a stock at the right time, right, with diminishing returns, and that they were able to move those guys, and just seeing that they really haven't done much since they've left Chicago is, you know, a little bit of a, I think the Bulls front office hasn't really gotten the accolades they should for seeing that and you know, making those moves.
No doubt. No doubt. Especially with Noah's recent outburst in New York. I don't know if you followed that at all with, I haven't heard the latest of that, but have you been keeping on top of that situation? Noah left the Knicks for personal reasons, missing next two games, and there's been some drama with Hornacek.
Right, and that's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about. I don't have any additional detail, but it's kind of odd that he and Rose both have left the teams they've been on since the Bulls for personal reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an odd coincidence, I guess, And again, hey, I loved what they did in the Bulls uniform at their peak. They were, you know, knocking on the door of getting to the finals. Both, well, obviously, Rose won an MVP. Noah was a candidate for it. So totally appreciate what they gave to the organization when they did. But in some ways, it's kind of sad and disappointing that it's gotten off the rails for both of them.
No doubt. No doubt. Very sad. Hey, before we wrap things up, want to get a little bit of your opinion on the beloved Bull. Have you been able to watch the recent set of games? The Lakers game, unfortunately, a loss, but Lakers have been playing well of late, winning 8 of 10. So they're a little bit better than, you know, people are giving them credit for, at least lately. And then obviously the loss at Philadelphia. I think Grant's just been horrific, you know, since taking over the starting spot with Dunn's absence. I think it's hurting the whole team. He just doesn't put his teammates in great position to succeed. And then obviously the other game, the win earlier in the week against, God, who am I missing? What game is it earlier this week that I missed before they played?
Well, there was the overtime against New Orleans.
Oh, the loss to New Orleans. Yes, exactly.
Which, again, in most of these games, other than Philly was the blowout loss, but other than that, I just like the fact that they've been very competitive and fun to watch. I thought the Laker game last night, they looked a little off overall. Obviously, Markkanen didn't play up to his capabilities, although it was still a game they could have, should have won. I don't think they deserved to win last night against the Lakers, which is disappointing because a home a home game against a team with a very similar record. But overall, big picture, love what these young guys are doing. I love that most nights they're right there, either competing down to the last minute, have a chance to win, you know, could have, should have won. But I don't think, even with some of this promise, they're going to really do anything in the playoffs. So I'm still hoping for, you know, the competitive tanking, development of the young guys, and being a good spot for a draft pick. Even if it's not one of the top five, it's still a very deep draft. And, I think, 5 to 12 or 13, there could be some pretty good players still available to help with where the Bulls are headed in the future.
Amen. Amen. I'm just hoping that, we finally choose a direction here pretty soon, because the longer Nico's on this team and, continuing to play at a great level, I really think after reanalyzing the draft, I don't know if you feel this way, but I think it goes 10 deep now. I kind of feel like a Mo Bamba could easily, and everybody seems to think there's this big kind of like delineation between the top four or five and the next five, and I don't see that. I think very could well be that Bridges ends up being better than Mo Bamba when it's all said and done. Do you feel that way too? Do you concur with that assertion?
I do. I think there is some depth in the draft, and even I just watched Duke lose to Virginia, but even a player like Gary Trent Jr., I think, is a solid player and could be a good pro, a good backcourt player. That's, a guy like that's probably going to be available, 18 to 25, So, without having all the list in front of me, I agree with you. I think it is a pretty deep draft, and I think the Bulls, even if they, slip out of the top five, which it looks like that's where it's headed, there's going to be good players available.
Yeah, I agree too. So the top, as long as they can maintain that top 10 status, I'll be fine. I think there is a little bit of a drop off. But, always at this time of the year, there's still a lot to happen between now and the draft. We got the NCAA tournament happening, and we'll see where that goes too. There's a lot between now and then that could happen, and we'll see where the blood would end up.
All right, and then speaking of Miles Bridges, we'll have to monitor this Michigan State situation. It looks like beyond the gymnastics, horrible information around that, it looks like the rest of the athletic department is in some, at minimum, some heavy scrutiny, and we'll see what happens with the football and basketball programs. We'll probably have more information on that the next time we record.
Yeah, well, I know the athletic director has already resigned. So he's gone, and there's a lot of pressure, I know, obviously, on D'Antonio and Izzo, Tom Izzo, the head basketball coach. And I've always liked Izzo, but, you hear about these revelations, and it really makes you think. You don't really know until you hear something like this. It's just continually surprising and disappointing.
Right. Well, and not only in the world of entertainment, politics, and sports, it's just disappointing. I'm speaking in generalities, not about Izzo in particular, but just that these people of power are not more responsible, and there's not more integrity. That the business, the money making, the power of keeping the program on the right track is overtaking any good judgment about victims of unfortunate incidents. But seems like the tide's turning, and there's more awareness, and certainly less or almost zero tolerance now for this, and that's why I'm kind of concerned where things may end up for Izzo.
Yeah, agreed. Tim,
all right, well,
thanks for jumping on
the
Bulls.
Great to talk with you, Fred, and it's been, again, this Bulls team has been a lot of fun to watch, and seeing these young guys develop, and what Markkanen's done, and hopefully Dunn will be back here soon. Levine's back in the lineup, and having some ups and downs. I know we're both on the Denzel bandwagon a little higher than most people, but I thought he had a good game again last night. His rebounding numbers are great, his passing. So again, a good glue guy and a role player. I would like to see part of the mix going forward too. So it's fun to see these young guys and the progress they're making.
Sounds good. Tim, have a good one, my friend. And we'll be talking again, hopefully,
Fred,
next week. Talk to you later.
Take care.